It's simply the best personal water filtration system available. So effective you can drink raw, untreated water from lakes, rivers, and streams. Unlike other sport bottles, the Sport Berkey's patented filter formulation is so powerful it removes cysts, parasites, harmful bacteria, and chemicals like herbicides and pesticides. It even reduces radon-222, lead, and other heavy metals. This lightweight, rugged 22-ounce filter is small enough to go everywhere, so take one to work and keep another in your glove box for emergencies. Get the Berkey Sport for only $39. Get two for $70 by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438. Order your Berkey Sport today. That's toll free.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Our guest this afternoon is Jim Mars, and Jim's an author of a number of books that we do carry, Rule by Secrecy and others, but today we thought we'd talk to him about his book, Terror Conspiracy, going into the background of what really happened on September 11th. And, of course, one reason we've asked Jim to come on, not that we don't always enjoy having him, but he's going to be a speaker at the Conspiracy Conference, which is going to be held in at the Marriott Convention Center there Santa Clara on the June 7th and June 8th, and that's June 7th and June 8th. And of course, Joyce Riley will be there, Barry Shamish will be there, Clifford Connicorm, Ralph Epperson, but of course, Jim's going to be there. And if you'd like more information, why don't you call them at 925-449-6844. That's 925-449-6844. Without further ado, hi, Jim. How are you doing?
Hey, Dr. Stan. It's always good to be with you.
Well, why don't you tell us a little bit about what this book is, Terror Storm. And incidentally, I'm having a terrible time getting a hold of your publisher because we wanted to carry the book, as we do in so many of your other books that are excellent. But, of course, an awful lot of people saw what happened on September 11, 2001, and believed the official government story.
Well, everybody saw what happened. We all saw what happened. The question is, what was it that we saw, and can we place that into a larger context? There are a number of really good books out. The theologian David Ray Griffin has written several, and there's other books that are being hailed. But they all concentrate usually on one aspect or the other. For instance, what brought down the Twin Towers, and of course the basic question there is, how does two planes bring down three buildings? You know, nobody's really quite explained that. In fact, Building 7 is the one that I think is the smoking gun of this 9/11, because Building 7, known as the Solomon Brothers Building, collapsed about 5:30 on that afternoon, just totally dropped into its own footprint. And if you'll see the photographs of it, it was nestled between the Verizon building on one side and the United States Post Office on the other, and generated no great damage to either one of those buildings. It just dropped right in with the walls facing in, a classic building implosion. And, of course, the owner of the building, Larry Silverstein, on public television even said, well, there had been such a loss of life, and I told them to pull it, and they pulled it, and we stood there and watched the building come down. And, of course, now there are a number of people on the record who said that they were told to get back, we're bringing the building down, and they could hear a countdown going on. So if that building was brought down by controlled explosives, why is it so far-fetched to think that the two Twin Towers were not brought down by controlled explosives? And the other very mysterious thing about Building 7 was that both on CNN and on the British BBC, they announced that Building 7 had collapsed about 30 minutes before it collapsed. In fact, it's really kind of sadly humorous that in the BBC broadcast, which is still available knocking around on YouTube and some of the other places on the Internet, you can see that section, and you can see the reporter talking about how this building collapsed, and yet over her shoulder, it's still standing there. And yet nobody's explained that. And yet when they went back to get the original footage to think, well, maybe the time frame was off, maybe somehow they got word ahead of time, or, you know, trying to figure out what was happening. The BBC said they had lost all of their original footage from 9/11. Isn't that amazing?
Isn't that amazing? Well, a lot of very strange things happened that day. We're going to be back in just a moment with Jim Haas as we begin exploring the terror conspiracy. We'll be right back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our special guest this afternoon is Jim Haas, who's an author. We carry his book, A Rule by Secrecy, and we've carried a number of his other books. The reason we're having him on, however, is he's going to be a speaker at the Conspiracy Conference, which is going to be held in Santa Clara on June 7th and June 8th. They have a great lineup this year. I think the best lineup I've ever seen, and we've been to a number of the conferences. We'll have a table there, at least on Sunday. But Sydney Joyce Riley is going to be there, Ralph Epperson, Barry Shamus, Clifford Conacorm, and, of course, our guest this afternoon, Jim Haas. So if you're interested in knowing more about it, you're going to have to call them. Their number is 925-449-6844. That's 925-449-6844 for the Conspiracy Conference, or go up on the Internet and just look up conspiracycon.com. Conspiracycon.com. Well, Jim has been telling us about certainly the greatest smoking gun of all is Building Number 7. And as he points out, how could two airplanes crashing into buildings take down three buildings? Why did the Building 7 come down at 5:20 or 5:30 in the evening? And, of course, how can you explain a steel-reconstructed or steel-reinforced building collapsing the way this one did? And anybody who's ever looked at the videos has realized this is a controlled demolition. It fell at the speed of gravity. It actually, the center parts of the building collapsed first, which is what you do with a controlled demolition. You can see the center part of the roof collapse, and then the base of the building dissolves, and the building collapses in its own shadow. It didn't tilt to either side. This was a controlled demolition. It was an expert job. And the question is, how did Osama bin Laden ever get in there to put the explosives in the building to bring it down? Or is it possible that those explosives were planted ahead of time, and that's the reason the building came down? And you pick up the story there, Jim.
Well, excuse me, I'm fighting off a chest cold here. Most amazing thing about Building 7 is that we, of course, would turn to the government to tell us what happened, right? Well, of course, the Bush administration dragged their feet for almost 2 years. The day after Pearl Harbor, there was an investigation. Within a week of the Kennedy assassination, the Warren Commission was founded. I mean, you know, throughout history, when something terrible happens, immediately Congress or somebody jumps in there and they begin to investigate. 2 years after 9/11, there had still been no meaningful investigation. But finally...
Hold that thought right there. Well, this is Dr. Stan, I guess, of course, is Jim Haas, and he's pointing out that certainly after the other catastrophes, we had Pearl Harbor, immediately there was an investigation. Right after the assassination of President Kennedy, there was an investigation, but after the collapse of the Twin Towers, and, of course, of the Building Number 7, the Bush administration did everything they could to block any sort of investigation. Why would they do that? Why wouldn't they try to get to the bottom of the story and bring out all the truth? And finally, of course, the initial investigation was the Joint Senate House Intelligence Committee. They came up with a report, and the Bush administration censored that report. They took out page after page. I have a copy of the report, and of course so many pages are missing, but at one point they took out 28 consecutive pages. Oh, were they trying to keep the information from Osama bin Laden, or were they trying to keep the information from the American people? If they were trying to conceal it from the American people, then what were they concealing? You pick up the story there, Jim.
Well, yeah. So finally, thanks in part to the continual pressure put on by the victims' families of 9/11, then finally, about 2 years after the event, then the Bush finally got around to setting up a 9/11 investigative commission. And at first, he wanted to put Henry Kissinger in charge, the very architect of our foreign policy for about the past 30 years that everybody agrees has put us in the situation we are now. Classic case of putting the fox in charge of the hen house. But there was an outcry. Henry stepped aside. And so they went ahead and brought in Thomas Keene and Lee Hamilton. And so let's turn to the 9/11 Commission that spent $13 million of tax money to determine what happened on 9/11. And what did they say brought down Building 7, the third building brought down that day? Dr. Stan,
they didn't say anything.
You know the answer to that.
They didn't say anything. They totally ignored it.
They did not even mention it. Is that incredible?
Yeah, well, of course, the thing is, they must think the American people are pretty stupid, and I think it's exciting to realize that probably at least a third of the American people don't believe the official government story, and we know from polls in New York City that over half the people there believe the government was involved in those buildings coming down, but we're never allowed to hear that because of the control of the media, man who actually was so instrumental in convincing the people of New York, Jimmy Walter. I don't know if you ran into him, but he spent $8 million of his own money running ads in the papers and on television in New York City, and they came after him. We don't know who it was, but somebody from the intelligence agencies terrorized and intimidated him and destroyed his car, and he was told if he didn't cease and desist, why, of course, he would be eliminated. And he's living in hiding over in Europe today. Jimmy Walters is living in hiding to protect his life. Because it's been threatened.
Well,
trying to bring out the truth.
Let's continue that thread of thought, because back about 1992 we had a presidential candidate that looked like he was not part of the same old bunch, and I'm talking about H. Ross Perot, and he built up quite a constituency, and there was a lot of groundswell support for putting a new face in there, a businessman, somebody might could put this country back on a money-making basis. And yet, at the height of his popularity, he drops out and said, "I'm not running."
Yeah, but why did he drop out?
He himself said he dropped out because he feared for the safety of his family.
Amen.
Now here's Jimmy Walter, a millionaire, who claims he has been threatened by people within the government, his life threatened. Here's H. Ross Perot, who's running for president of the United States, and drops out because he fears for the safety of his family. Now think about it, folks. If he's a presidential candidate, he can seek protection from the FBI, the CIA, the Secret Service, the police forces, the military of the U.S. Who has he got to fear?
Well, of course, I actually had the opportunity to interview a man named Chip Tatum, who was a government assassin. His job was to kill Ross Perot. And he refused to do it, and of course had to go into hiding. And I'm told it was just recently his body washed up on the shore of some island out there in the Caribbean, where he had been hiding for trying
Chipper
to protect his
Chipper
life.
Chip Roulette's no longer living.
No. This is Chip Tatum notes. Apparently, he died. He was killed himself recently.
Oh, okay. Well, see, what kind of nation is it where we have people who try to tell the truth, who try to run for office, and are given death threats? I mean, it goes back to what one of the Warren Commission members said. They said, "We've got to find that Oswald was a lone assassin, or the world will think that the United States is just another banana republic." Well, folks, I'm afraid we're just another banana republic, unless we wake up and start taking the reins of power back into our own hands instead of handing it over to pedophiles and womanizers and corrupt politicians and criminals.
I agree with you totally. Let's get some of the other things about what happened on September 11, 2001.
Well, we now know, thanks to pilots for 9/11 Truth, that they managed to get hold of the black box flight data recorder for the flight that they said crashed into the Pentagon. And what it clearly shows is that plane never got closer than about 300 feet above the ground, which would take it well over the Pentagon. It didn't crash into anything. And, of course, that only supports what the people at the scene said, such as April Gallup, who I interviewed. She and her young child crawled through the hole in the side of the Pentagon after having been knocked off their feet by an explosion of some sort.
I think this is so important, Jim. This was a woman who was actually in the Pentagon there that morning when the explosion came in. And tell, why don't you just tell her a story, because that was the most incredible story.
Right. Well, she worked at the Pentagon, had gone there that morning, had taken her young son with her briefly, and was getting ready to go try to take care of some, get her work for the day kind of lined out, and then she was going to take her son to daycare. And while she was at her desk, it's almost funny, she said, excuse me, she got ready to finish up something on her computer, and she pushed the button, and there was an explosion. And she was knocked off her feet, and her first thought was, well, my God, what did I do? What button did I push? But then as she became conscious of the destruction around her, of course, her first thought was for her young son. And she crawled around until she found his baby carriage, or one of those little strollers, and it was just all wadded up into a knot, just mangled. And now she's really fearful, and so now she's calling for him, and she finally hears him, and she finally locates him, and he is injured, but not critically. And so she takes him, and they both crawl through the hole on the west side of the Pentagon. And by the time all this had happened, and they got outside, some of the more critically injured people had already been taken off by ambulance, and there were no more ambulances. So some good Samaritan bystander said, well, here, I'll take you to the hospital. And he drove him to the hospital in his private car. And while in the hospital, a day or so later, he's visited by government suit types who will not identify themselves or what agency they represent. And she assumed that they were there to debrief her and find out what she knew about what had happened. But what she told me was they just kept trying to tell her that, well, it was a plane. A plane hit the building. Now, you know it was a plane. We all know it's a plane. It was a plane. And it's like they were trying to force her into saying that there was a plane.
But if she didn't see any of it as the plane, she came out through the hole.
I asked her point blank. I said, well, look, while you were in your offices and while you were crawling through that hole, I said, did you ever see any evidence of an airplane or even any parts of an airplane? And she emphatically said no.
Well, because these government agents were trying to convince her there was an airplane there, wasn't she actually warned to keep quiet?
Exactly, and the thing is, Stans, that's the same thing I heard over and over from people who were in Dealey Plaza at the time of the Kennedy assassination. The FBI would, or Secret Service would come to them, and they'd say, well, I heard shots up on that grassy knoll, and they'd say, no, you didn't. We've established all the shots came from the Texas School Book Depository. That's what you heard. And just all but browbeat them into changing their story or to adhering to the government's line. It's just standard operating procedure. And again, we have to start asking ourselves, what kind of nation are we living in?
Well, of course.
Now, all of this stuff we're talking about, by the way, is all in my book, The Terror Conspiracy, Deception, 9/11, The Loss of Liberty. It's a pretty thick book. It's got 30 pages of source section. Yeah, everything is fully sourced, and it not only tells the story of 9/11 and brings up some of the issues we're talking about now,
I think it's
but actually puts it all into a context. You see, there was a neoconservative think tank called the Project for a New American Century, and a year before 9/11, they had issued a report saying that America needed to become the new empire, and we needed to gain control over the resources of the Middle East, and we needed to have more troops over in the Middle East to impose our will, and that we needed to invade Afghanistan, and we needed a regime change in Iraq. But they said, the authors of this report said, that's going to kind of be a hard sell to the American public unless there is a, quote, catalyzing and catastrophic event like a new Pearl Harbor, end quote.
And of course, anybody can.
So they were calling for a new Pearl Harbor a year before 9/11.
Anybody can find that. It's on the newamericancentury.org website, newamericancentury.org. The publication called Rebuilding America's Defenses.
Right.
That's Rebuilding America's Defenses, and that's exactly as Jim says. And they call for this cataclysmic, catastrophic event, like another Pearl Harbor. And ladies and gentlemen, what happened on September 11th was a catastrophic, catalyzing event that got the American people to be willing to go to war. They knew exactly what they were doing. And it never would have happened if those buildings hadn't come down and all those Americans hadn't died. We're going to be back in just a moment with Jim Morris. Well, Jim, you go right ahead from there.
Well, I think it may be important to stop and think now about why is it important that we go back and unravel the truth of 9/11. And the importance cannot be understated. This is not ancient history. We are losing at least two people a day in Iraq and almost a like number in Afghanistan right now as we speak because we have invaded those two countries, both of which invasions were based on retaliation or a response to 9/11. We are now having ubiquitous cameras on every street corner. They now are still wrangling the courts, but while they're wrangling the courts, they're still listening in on our telephone conversations. They're into our bank account information. There's virtually nothing that can be done today that the government can't come and peer into, examine, scrutinize. And all of this is due to 9/11. If 9/11 had not happened, none of this would be happening. So I think it's critically important to understand what's going on, because if 9/11 and the subsequent war on terrorism is a fraud, then everything that's happening to us today is based on a fraud. And it's all fraudulent, and we're being had.
Well, I certainly agree with you totally, and I think it's so vitally important that people understand, you know, that almost 3,000 Americans died that day. Who is responsible? We're told it was Osama bin Laden. But as we go to the FBI website, looking at the 10 most wanted men, the FBI doesn't list Osama bin Laden as being wanted for what happened at the World Trade Center. He's wanted for association with what happened in Kenya and Tanzania. But
yeah, the K-Bar Towers.
Right.
When the FBI was asked, why aren't you seeking Osama bin Laden for his role in 9/11, a FBI spokesman said, well, we have no hard evidence that Osama bin Laden was involved in 9/11. And that, my friends, is the bald-faced truth.
And, of course, the thing is, it was because of supposedly Osama bin Laden was involved that we went to war in Afghanistan. And then supposedly because somehow or other Saddam Hussein was involved with what happened, or maybe because he had weapons of mass destruction, or... Well, anyway, that's why we went to war with Iraq. And we have to get back to what happened on September 11th, because they lied to us about that. Everything else that has happened since then is a lie.
I know it. And unfortunately, excuse me, having lived through the 15 years of 55-mile-hour speed limits down here in Texas on these wide-open highways and flat land and no obstacles, you know, I can tell you right now it's going to be very, very difficult to try to return this country to the lifestyle and to the life that we had prior to 9/11. And the reason for that is right now we have huge layers of bureaucracy, Homeland Security, which now permeates our society down to telling local sheriff's department and local police departments how to handle their business. We have all this bureaucracy. We have a whole new level of bureaucrats, whole new level administration, and they're all sucking billions of dollars out of our economy. Money that could be going for schools, highway, environmental cleanup, all kinds of good stuff. But no, we're spending it all on the war, on terror. And those people that have those positions of power...
Hold that thought, Jim. Hold that thought, please.
They don't want to give it up.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Jim Mars. His book is A Terror Conspiracy. And he's pointing out that it was not only certainly the so-called responsibility of the wicked Osama bin Laden who was responsible for what happened. At least that's what we're told. And yet, of course, if you go to the FBI website and look for the 10 most wanted men, you'll find one of them is Osama bin Laden. But no mention of the World Trade Center. And Jim points out that the FBI officials have said, well, the reason that, of course, we don't list Osama bin Laden wanted for the World Trade Center is we have no evidence that it was involved in the World Trade Center bombing. And you can check this out. You can go up on the Internet and check it out on your own and find out if we're telling the truth. And, of course, we're telling you the truth. We can't afford not to. But the point Jim makes is, this was a watershed event, and as a result of that, now we've got the Office of Homeland Security creating, for all intents and purposes, a Gestapo-like state. We have informants all across the country keeping records on people. They're watching what you do with your finances. They're watching your health records. They're watching your travel records. They're keeping dossiers on the American people, and it all goes back to the fact that Osama bin Laden attacked us on September 11th, 2001. But what happens? What happens if that isn't true? Then it means that all of this and all the money we're wasting, the hundreds of billions of dollars right here in America on Homeland Security, is not necessary, and there is no domestic threat of terrorism other than that's created by FBI informants and agent provocateurs who offer these poor, stupid sometimes, and I hate to say that, but sometimes very foolish young Muslim men are offered $50,000 to join in a plot to blow up the Sears Tower. And, of course, it's all contrived by the FBI. And then, of course, when it goes to trial, on two separate occasions, you've all heard about the effort to blow up the Sears Tower, on two separate occasions, juries have heard the case and said there was no plot. It was all an FBI scam. And on two occasions, there have been mistrials. So the government's going to go back and try them a third time. After all, if at first you don't succeed in convincing the American people there's a terrorist threat, we'll do it again, and we'll do it again. And we'll just keep doing it until finally we can find some jury that will convict them, these Muslims, of being part of a terror plot, whereas, of course, they were really all victims of an FBI agent provocateur. So pick the story up there, Jim.
Well, I think another smoking gun points the direction of who was truly behind 9/11. And that is the capture of one of the top al-Qaeda chiefs, Abu Zubaydah, in Pakistan in mid-2002. At that time, the Bush White House made a big deal of this and said, by golly, we're going to make him talk. And they did. They tricked him. They tricked him into revealing the truth, which was that he was actually working for three Saudi royals, three Saudi princes, and that their cutout, his controller, was Air Marshal Meir of Pakistan, who was closely connected to their ISI, which is, everyone knows, a creation of our CIA. So now we find out, and you mentioned earlier in the program, the 28 pages of the Joint Congressional Commission that was looking into 9/11 that was censored by the Bush White House. Those 28 pages concerned the connection to Saudi Arabia. And we all know, it's been publicly stated, that 15 of the 19 named hijackers were not Iraqis or Afghans. They were Saudi Arabians. Okay? So who is the closest business friend and social friends to the Saudi royals and to the bin Laden family in particular, but the Bush family and their connection, their business connection through the Carlyle Group and through the construction companies that they both have an interest in. And so, wow. Now we find out that, if there was some country we should have gone after, it should have been Saudi Arabia. But this is being kept from us. Instead, we were led to believe that Saddam Hussein had something to do with it. Although even President Bush now has fully acknowledged that Saddam Hussein had nothing to do with 9/11, and neither did anybody in Afghanistan. Is absolutely incredible. This stuff has all come out. You'll find it detailed in my book, The Terror Conspiracy. You'll find it in many other places, but it's not being used to hit you over the head with 24/7 by the corporate control mass media that does not really want anyone to know what's going on, because their subsidiaries, their construction companies, their defense contractors are all making too much money off these wars.
And almost a million Iraqis have died. They tell us 4,500 American boys have died, but what they don't want to tell you is that 18 American returned servicemen, 18 of them commit suicide every single day, and they're covering this up. They don't dare let the American people know. Over 300,000 of our servicemen have serious brain injuries as a result of this. They're not considered the rest of the casualties. They look perfectly normal. It's just their brain doesn't function. Another 300,000 of our returned veterans from the recent wars are ill for some other reason. We don't know what it is.
Well, that's due to faulty vaccinations.
All right.
And to depleted uranium.
Hey, hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, go ahead, Jim. I'm sorry. I have no control over it. This is the board. The computer tells me what to do, so you go right ahead.
Well, it's just a microcosm of our life today. We're all being run by the computer. No, but you know what? Let me tell you, it's even worse than you were saying, Stan, because they acknowledge about, 4,700 battle fatalities right now.
Right.
But that's what they're acknowledging. And what I checked on and found out is true is that if you're shot in Iraq or Afghanistan, and then you're shipped to a hospital, say in Germany or Turkey, and then you die in that hospital, they don't count you as a battle casualty. So the numbers are being jiggled with, just like they were during the Vietnam War, just like they were during the first Gulf War. And so when you take the total number of casualties, add in people who've died from sickness and accident, which, again, don't count under battle casualties, and yet they wouldn't be dead if they hadn't been over in that country and caught that disease or had that truck fall on them. Now, all of a sudden, according to the VA's own statistics, we're up in excess of 60,000 casualties. In other words, in the 5 years of the Iraq and Afghan wars, we've already lost more than we did in the 10 years of Vietnam. And people need to be aware of this. And as you say, that's not counting the hundreds of thousands of wounded, either mentally or physically, and nor the people who are going to be coming down with all kinds of ailments, such as the Gulf War syndrome, which is going to be twice as bad this time because there's twice as much depleted uranium lying around.
Well, it's a pretty sad commentary. Of course, we can all trace it back to what happened on September 11th.
It goes back to 9/11.
And that is why, of course, it's so important that our listeners understand what really happened. And that's why I'm sure Jim was motivated to write this book, to try to get us to go back, to begin to focus on what happened. Because if we were lied to about what happened that day, if this was all carefully staged and the planes crashing into the buildings had nothing to do with those buildings coming down. Those buildings came down because of controlled demolition. And you know, over 1,100 bodies have never been found or identified, any part of them, there in the Twin Towers. What happened to those bodies? Were they crushed when the building pancaked? Or were they vaporized when, of course, the building exploded? Or were they cremated when the building burned with the heat of a crematorium for 3 months? Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Jim Mars. We're going to be speaking at this conspiracy conference in Santa Clara on June 7th and June 8th. Jim, before we go on, I want you to tell our listeners how they can get copies of your book.
Well, they're available from a lot of different outlets. I understand, I think you offer some of them. They're available at any bookstore. The one that we've been talking about is the Terror Conspiracy, Deception, 9/11, The Loss of Liberty. It's a pretty thick book. It's about, it's about 482, almost 500 pages.
You don't happen to have that publisher's telephone number, because I've tried repeatedly to get through, and I haven't done a very good job.
I don't have a number in front of me, but it's the Disinformation Company in New York City.
And you go to their website, you can't find a telephone number there, I'll tell you. I've wasted it, so I don't know how. I'll call you off the air to get the information.
Yeah. Or, yeah, but I'll see if I can dig one up.
You get this.
You can also order it off my website, jimmars.com. Or from Amazon, just any number of the usual places.
All right, that's jimmars.com, M-A-R-R-S.com. Okay, that's a good place to go. Amazon.com, certainly, probably, hopefully if we ever can get hold of some books, why we'll carry it as
That'd
well.
That'd be great.
Our telephone number.
You were mentioning what happened to the bodies.
Right.
My question is, what happened to about two-thirds of the debris? According to the government's figures, those 210-story towers should have produced 4.5 million tons of debris, and yet by their own figures, they only hauled away 1.5 million tons of debris. What happened to the other 3 million tons of debris?
Well, you know,
what was it? How can a building that just falls down? Now, let's back up and just use our heads for a minute. We're told a plane hit the building. The plane had jet fuel in it. The jet fuel set the building on fire. There was a fire up about the 80th floor, okay, and for some reason, the story has changed. First it was the zipper effect, and now it's the pancake effect, but for some reason, those floors just, you know, weakened and then dropped, and there was more weight, and it dropped, and that caused more weight, and it just brought those buildings down, okay? So if that's the case, you've got a building that's 110 stories with 4.5, should have produced 4.5 million tons of debris that would have stacked up about 10 stories high. And instead, we only had about 2 stories high of debris, and they hauled off 1.5 million tons. Where did the rest of it go?
Well, what do you think the rest of it went, Jim?
Well, if the building had simply fallen down, it should have all been there.
Right.
The fact that it disappeared shows that it was pulverized.
Right.
It was disintegrated.
Right.
There was an extreme pressure wave there that disintegrated not only concrete, but steel. And there are even films and photographs of girders in the air disintegrating. Now, what can cause that? Not a plane hitting the building, I can guarantee.
Well,
of course, there's a lot of controversy over what could cause that. Particle beam weapons, nuclear weapons, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But until there's an honest investigation, all we can say is this was not a building falling down.
I mean, first of all, it fell at the speed of gravity. There would always be resistance if there, you know, weren't explosions to destroy the structure of all these major steel girders. Something had to take out all those steel girders at every floor level.
And something had to produce enough heat that melted those steel girders and kept them melted for weeks, because even 6 weeks after 9/11, they were still finding pools of molted steel in the basement areas.
And that is one of the strangest things. You know, I found that so hard to believe until I read the book written by the man, the medical doctor who was responsible for identifying the bodies, the DNA of the bodies. He talked about how for 3 months in the basement of the building it burned at a heat of the crematorium. How could it burn for 3 months? I mean, what was going on? Certainly, ordinarily you have a fire in a building and you put in water and it stops burning. But
right.
Not at the World Trade Center. So something very strange occurred, and of course nobody in any of the investigations ever want to ask those questions.
Of course not, because the investigations were always carefully controlled and carefully directed. There has never been, to this day, a full-blown, in-depth, honest investigation.
Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. or 464-8295. And certainly our guest is Jim Mars, who's a well-known author, and we still carry his book, Ruled by Secrecy, and a couple of other books, and we will carry this one, The Terror Conspiracy, as soon as we can get our hands on it. And of course, Jim is an establishment publisher. Ordinarily, of course, the establishment publishes his book, some of the biggest publishers. Well, do you want to tell the story of what happened? Because you wrote this book right after 9/11. And what happened to, we won't mention the name of the major publisher, but everything was all said, had been checked by the lawyers, they were ready to publish it, and then what happened at the last minute, just before your book was to be published, it was back, what, about 2003, 2002?
2002. Yep. Well, right after 9/11, I saw the same methodology in place that I'd seen following the Kennedy assassination. Within an hour, they named a culprit. Even though there was a lack of evidence, even though nobody basically could have possibly known what truly happened. And from that point on, all the investigation was aimed at trying to prove up that Osama bin Laden was behind it all. there was a concerted drumbeat in the mass media to tell us, oh, well, this happens, and let's move on, bind up the wounds, and let's just get on with life, and don't bother looking at this. And so needless to say, I began to look at it, and I realized right away that at least a dozen nations, including the Taliban in Afghanistan and including Fidel Castro, had tried to warn us that we were about to be attacked. And not only were these warnings ignored, which is bad enough, but you could write that off to just foolishness and unawareness, but in many instances, both through the early Bush administration and back into the Clinton administration, there had actually been actions taken to block any meaningful investigation into al-Qaeda and into what was happening. And we now know that in the mid-90s in the Philippines, they busted a al-Qaeda cell. They found the plans for Operation Bojinka, which called for hijacking airplanes and crashing them into buildings, specifically naming the World Trade Center. So for Condoleezza Rice and Dick Cheney to stand up and say, oh, well, who could have ever guessed that they would have used airplanes as weapons, is just an outright lie. And so I had all this put together, and plus so much more. For example, at least half of the people that the FBI is still telling us were the hijackers, those identities belong to people in the Middle East who are still alive and who showed up at the foreign minister's office in Saudi Arabia. And they said, I don't know why they're putting my name out there. I didn't have anything to do with it. And one fellow was a pilot for Saudi Arabia Airlines, and he said he had lost his passport or had been stolen from him while he was visiting in Denver. So, who were these people? And even the head of the FBI, in the days following 9/11, admitted that they weren't sure who these people were. Well, if we're not sure who they were, then how in the world do we know who they're working for? And none of this was ever followed up on. Karen Breitweiser was the widow of one of the 9/11 victims, and she asked right off the bat, since the media was reporting that on the afternoon of 9/11, the FBI was already combing restaurants, hotels, and flight schools, where these supposed hijackers had been staying and had been taking flight training that afternoon. How did they know where to go? How did they know who they were, and how did they know where they were? I mean, good question, and that's never been answered. How did they know who it was? Did they know more about them than we've been told? Did they have their phone numbers and their addresses? And if so, how come?
And not only that, but they had pictures of them all. I mean, remember
all of them, except as I say, at least half of them are still alive. That
right.
is not the right people. So, see, we still don't know what happened, and yet we're facing curtailment of our liberties. And all this high-priced gas, we're losing people right and left over in Afghanistan, all because of 9/11.
And I think it's such a tragedy, and we have to go back to what really happened that day, and why did Building 7 come down? and nobody wants to address that, and the 911 commission wouldn't address it, and the special investigation of paid architects has still never said why Building 7 came down. Let's go to Michael, who's calling from Salinas. Hi, Michael. How are you doing? You have a question for our guest?
No, I just wanted to mention how, you know, you said that there were so many tons that got separated from the building, or that came down.
Right.
Basically, it's like a Coke can that's like half full. When you were to smash it out and you've seen all the dust that came out and flew across the town, it's basically like that. That's why so much of it was dispersed out and across the town. There was more cleanup on the outside of it than there was centrally on top of the base of the building.
Right. So you're saying it was that pulverization of the concrete that created those dust clouds, right?
Yeah, it was basically the impact of the top of the building just collapsing down over and over again throughout floor after floor, and then it just bursted out.
Well,
the concrete and ash and steel was forced out of the building than it was actually at the base of the building itself.
I mean, what you're suggesting then, this was just a normal collapse, or are you suggesting that there were explosives in the buildings?
Well, I don't think it was explosives. I think it was the main heat caused the section where it was impacted to take a massive heat from the jet fuel or plane fuel that was in it.
Well, can you explain to me why Building 7 came down? That is the major, question nobody wants to ask. This did not get hit by a plane at all. Why did Building 7 come down?
Well, it could have been that the impact from the other building coming down could have crashed into it or...
But there's no evidence it happened.
Well, there were two buildings intervening. Building 5 and 6 and Versey Street were all intervening between the Twin Towers and Building 7. And like I said, the two buildings on either side of Building 7, they weren't seriously damaged at all.
Hmm.
Have you ever seen the pictures, Michael, of Building 7 coming down?
I've never seen them.
Could I suggest, would you do something for me? Would you go up on the Internet to Google and dial in Building 7 videos? And watch those buildings come down, see how the center of the building collapses first, as you always would with a controlled demolition, so they collapse inward, and then the base of the building explodes and the building comes down in its own shadow. Doesn't tilt to one side or the other, comes right down, just like a controlled demolition. Anyway, do that and then give us a call, will you?
Okay, I will do that.
Thanks so much, and again, I hope our other listeners will do the same thing. Would you have any other thoughts that you'd like to give to Michael there? Jim, I think that there are a lot of good people.
I'm just wondering how many building demolitions that Michael has personally witnessed. Probably one, if he's lucky. But not too many people get to be on site and watch a building being demolished. But as a newspaper reporter for so many years, I've covered more than a half dozen building demolitions. And being a print reporter, I didn't have the luxury of just taking a picture or film of it or videotape and saying, wow, look at that. I had to actually fill up news columns. So I had to go and interview the demolition experts and the people who actually bring buildings down by controlled demolition. And it was all carefully explained to me, and it was became very clear that you don't just take some explosives and blow a building down. And it's very much more complicated than that. You have to have just the right kind of explosives. They have to be placed at just the right points. They have to be set off in just the right sequence. It's a very time-consuming and tedious type job, and it has to be done exactly right or you're going to have a real mess on your hands. But the key point here is, and back to the thing that it prompted him to say that when the buildings collapsed, it was, I don't know, something about heat, I guess, created all that dust. And there's absolutely no question that when a building's blown down, there's tons of dust gets thrown up in the air. But in every building collapse I've ever witnessed, and that's more than a half dozen of them, there's always huge slabs of concrete left, okay? Because when a building comes down, it just collapses. It falls down on itself. It does not disintegrate. It just falls apart and collapses. And they usually have to bring in wrecking balls, and they have to break up all that concrete where they can get it into small enough chunks where they can haul it away. In the World Trade Center, there was no concrete. Look at the pictures of Ground Zero taken that afternoon or the next day. There's just steel girders lying there and dust. What? Something. They created a huge pressure wave. Totally disintegrated the cement in those buildings. And people need to start thinking about that.
I mean, absolutely. When you see those massive clouds of dust, and they're coming out from the upper stories, not from the base of the building. And, of course, I would simply point out that people who are in the building, like William Rodriguez, and we have interviews with him, hear the explosions in the basement of the building, before the plane hit up above. And, of course, if what we're told is true, why did the basement of the building burn for 3 months with the intensity of a crematorium? At least this is what we've had. And they find molten metal down there weeks and weeks afterwards. I mean, what would cause the steel to burn?
And why has almost 50 people who were first responders come down with blood cell cancer, which is what you find in the wake of a nuclear accident?
I hadn't heard that, but I'm sure that's accurate because I know Jim Morris is not going to put it out if it isn't accurate. And we're not hearing about that sort of thing. Well, let's go to Mike calling. Hi, Mike. Do you have a quick question or comment?
Just a couple of comments. Barbara asked if I would mention the Richard Gage DVD, Architects and Engineers for 911 Truth.
Architects and Engineers for 911 Truth, and we'll probably be carrying that.
Yeah, people like to challenge people like us, and since we're not experts or engineers or doctorates and whatever, that we can't really properly analyze what we saw on ABC, CBS, NBC, and CNN that day. I think anybody can analyze for themselves that those buildings came down by controlled demolition.
Well, you're absolutely correct.
Even Dan Rather that day said, well, that looked like a building demolition that we've seen so much of.
Many of them said that. And that's all they said just in the first few minutes of it all, and then they were shut up from that.
That's right. From then on, the official story took over.
For the previous caller, there's a website dedicated to Building 7. I believe it's WTC7.org. Or if you just type in World Trade Center Building 7, you'll get all kinds of stuff. And there's so many clips available, and they're all accurate. I've snooped all around, and I haven't seen one that I felt was distorted. I remember it crystal clear from the day they first showed it to us live, the live collapse of the building.
Well, I think, Mike, the difficulty is that the average American finds it difficult to believe that people in our government I don't know who did it, but somebody actually, I believe, put explosives in building number 7. Who it was, I don't know.
Yeah.
But, of course, why have they done everything they could to block further investigation, unless there's something to cover up? Hey, thanks so much for calling, Mike.
One last thing.
Go ahead. Yeah. Go ahead.
About the collapse of the towers, for those who insist on this pancake collapse, they can very easily get themselves a study. This takes maybe an hour or so of the structural elements of the towers, and take a good look at the massive steel core. And if you want to go ahead and believe in the pancake collapse, let the pancakes come down. Even though there's no pancakes on the ground, the floors are all gone, but the steel core should still be there, or even just half of it, or even just a quarter of it, but absolutely none of it is left.
Amen to
massive,
that.
Massive steel
That's
core.
That's absolutely correct.
Gone.
47 huge steel girders all welded together in the center of those buildings, and none of it existing after the smoke cleared.
And the thing is that those had to collapse floor after floor after floor. I mean, how would you get them spontaneously to dissolve at each floor? Wouldn't there be any resistance anywhere? Hey, thanks so much for calling.
Okay,
bye-bye. All right, Jim, you got about a minute and a half to finish up the program for us.
Well, we've seen some of the facts, and there's so much more. I would heartily recommend that you read my book, The Terror Conspiracy. Find out all the questions, find out what the experts say, what the other experts say, and then put it into a context, and then start using that God-given computer in your head that we call the brain, and start using that, and quit listening to the hirelings on the corporate control mass media telling you how to think, and start thinking for yourself.
Well, I think that's the important thing. I think it's up to each one of us to figure out what really happened. And this is why I know you wrote your book. This is why we keep talking about this and why we put together a great deal of information on it and pamphlets and in tape sets. Why did the buildings come down? Did they come down as we were told? Or is it possible? Is it just conceivable that they needed an incident to get us into war?
And right. Well, just ask yourselves two questions. Number one, how does three buildings come down after being hit by only two planes? And then next, ask yourself, if we are indeed in a war on terrorism and that there's an international terrorist group that's hell-bent on destroying this country or slipping weapons of mass destruction into our country, how come to this very day nothing substantial has been done to secure the borders of this nation?
I think that, of course, is one of the key questions that everybody needs to
ask. Those two questions.
God bless. Thanks very much, Jim. We look forward to seeing you there at the Conspiracy Conference.
We'll see you at the Conspiracy Con.
Bye-bye. Okay. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I hope you enjoyed Jim Mars, and I hope you'll be considering going to the Conspiracy Conference on June 7th and June 8th, and Jim will be a speaker. I think he's going to be a speaker on the 7th, and I will be there myself on the 8th, but I won't be speaking, of course. And if you need more information, why, you can always give us a call, and we'll be glad to put you in touch with Brian, who's putting the program on. He's got an excellent lineup this year. Now, of course, we have a three-pamphlet set based upon the newsletters we put together entitled Foreknowledge 911, Parts 1, 2, and 3. And we recommend them to you. They're inexpensive. And then, of course, we have another pamphlet we put together called The True Story of 911, where we simply take material from the 911 Commission report. And when Condoleezza Rice was asked, why didn't you do anything? You knew the attack was coming. Why didn't you do anything? And I quote from page 183, Rice pointed out that the nation simply wasn't prepared to take drastic action against Al-Qaeda before 911, either abroad or in reforming government at home, and said, until there is a catastrophic event that forces people to think differently, that forces people to overcome all customs and old culture and old fears about domestic intelligence, you don't get that kind of change. Well, we sure got it after 9-1-1, didn't we? We've got, of course, a book called The Conspiracy Timeline or The Terror Timeline. We think it's an excellent book. We carry the four tape sets on 911 and 911 update, and an excellent one, Why Did the Buildings Come Down? And you'll hear the interviews with Jimmy Walter, who's now living in hiding in Europe. Why? Because, of course, he spent a great deal of his own money running ads to try to get the American people to question what happened, and anybody who did that, of course, had to be destroyed. Poor Michael Rupert did that, pointing out, of course, that on the morning of the attack, there were a number of feigned attacks, simulated attacks, where planes were supposedly hijacked and crashed into government buildings. In fact, if you read my newsletter, we point out that there were 29 simulated hijackings that morning. 29 simulated hijackings, and you wonder why NORAD and the FAA were confused. It was all intended that way. Anyway, of course, the information is there. We hope you'll want to get our pamphlets. We hope you'll want to get our four tape sets. We hope you'll stop and question, could anything be this evil? And the answer is, of course, it could be this evil, because we're dealing with organized evil. If you haven't yet, of course, heard my talk on Nundare College Genocide, if you haven't heard my talk on the planned population reduction, where we point out that there is a plan to eliminate almost 5.5 billion people on the earth, and we simply give the documentation from their sites, and we invite you to go to Elberton, Georgia, to see the satanic monument that's there, where they talk about maintaining humanity at 500 million people in constant balance with nature. You need to see our Nundare College Genocide DVD, our DVD, Planned Population Reduction. You need to get our four-tape set on population control and read the Population Control Agenda monograph. It's available at Radio Liberty by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927 if you want to see the government documents on that. We have National Security Settlement Memorandum 200. That's NSSM 200. So bound we have. We have the testimony of Dr. David MacArthur before the House Appropriations, Military Appropriations Committee. In 1969, we asked for $10 million so they can build a new biological weapon for which there is no immune response, a convenient means of mass killing. And he said some people think we shouldn't create this new disease because it's another method of mass killing. But we wanted to go ahead and do it. We have the testimony, and of course we have so much more at Radio Liberty. Our number 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Please go to our website at RadioLiberty.com where you can listen 9 hours a day to our satellite feed, RadioLiberty.com, and pray for America. Pray for revival. Please pray for Radio Liberty.
You're listening to the Global Star Radio Network, located at Telstar 5 KU band, frequency 11836, symbol rate 2077.